Welcome to the Pride of Detroit podcast, PODcast. You're here for your home for the Detroit Lions, the NFL, hot takes on movies, cars, everything that comes in through the mailbag. This is for the people, by the people. People referenced here as fans of the Detroit Lions Football Club. Detroit Lions FC. That's what we are. POD. PrideOfDetroit.com, at Pride of Detroit on Twitter. Pride of Detroit on Facebook. You know where to find us. We're on iTunes. We're on Stitcher. We're on Blog Talk Radio. This is the PODcast. I am Chris Lemieux, the adequate host, at adequate host. Joining me, as always, Jeremy Reisman, the fearless leader, at Detroit Online. Jeremy, yo.
How's it going?
It's going great. Ryan Matthews. Back is the motherfucking rock guy. Is here. At Ryan underscore P-O-D. Ryan, rock god, what are we doing?
I want you to refer to me as Captain Leo Davidson for the rest of the podcast.
You're really... Okay. We've got a list cast coming later. Action movie list cast. I don't know what he's referencing. So you'll have to tune in and find out. Our friends at the New York Times asked us to put together a list cast of the top action movies of the 21st century. So that's on the show. We're also doing a new game, Over Under, which we are doing with the NFL Draft. And we're covering the Lions and doing the mailbag. Last but not least, Alex Reno is here at Alex underscore Reno. I do not have a witty nickname for him. He is the draft liker. How are you doing, Alex?
Yep, I like drafts. How's it going, guys?
Yeah, he's just going to be the draft liker.
Not monotone sponge or whatever from that review.
Oh, God. Forgot about that completely.
I didn't. I still remember. I'll never forget.
We'll never forget. We're here. It is the Pride of Detroit podcast, and we are still cleaning up from the draft. I apologize for using that language, apparently, though, to one person on Twitter who has 19 followers who got really mad when I said that it was a mess, that we're still cleaning up from the draft mess. And he implied that I had said something very nasty about it. But of course, because it came from the POD account, Jeremy was the one who got all the flack.
This is really funny. I mean, you drop mess, and then Jeremy has to clean it all up.
Yep. That's how it works around here.
You make that the mess, and Jeremy has to clean it up. Does that sound accurate, Jeremy?
That's why they pay me the big bucks.
Okay, cool. Captain Leo Davidson.
They pay you. Stop it, Ryan. Good God.
I'm stealing valor. You should appreciate this. Of anybody, you should appreciate this.
I do appreciate the stealing of valor.
This is not a visual medium, but Chris just saluted me.
Kinda, yeah. It's that or whatever I did there. Anyway, let's talk about the Lions. Let's talk about the draft. We're still kind of cleaning up. We really didn't have, like, we put in about, 90 minutes last week on the draft. We still don't feel like we've talked enough about it. We're going to talk a little bit more about some of the other teams in the draft and how we think they did. But let's keep talking about the Lions, because I want to talk about the reactions so far. So you've heard our reactions. If you haven't, stop this podcast, go back, listen to last week, come back here. Give you a second to do that. But a lot of experts have now weighed in. And I think the reason why this guy flipped out when I said that, you know, we're cleaning up from the podcast, from the draft mess, is that, I don't know. There's been a lot of experts who've been out here panning the Lions and the draft, their draft class, the one that they just had.
Yeah, and it's interesting, the reaction that it's been getting. It's not all that surprising to me, because I think the Lions took some unorthodox picks. We talked a little bit about it last week. You know, a lot of people, the Tease Tabor has been really a point of contention with a lot of people. I think Kenny Golladay is just as contentious, if not more. And you get a lot of people throwing out that word reach, which I think is an objectionable term. Like, I do not like using that, because you have no idea where these guys are going to go. Like, we were talking about guys like Tano Passignon going in the fourth or fifth round. He went in the second. Like, you just never know where these guys are going to go. So you look around the NFL. Pete Prisco, CBS, dropped him 10 slots in his power rankings because they didn't address the defensive line. I think it was an NFL.com guy, I can't remember, had him as the 30th best draft class. And then an insider inside the NFL that ESPN interviewed said that this was the worst draft class of the year. And to me, the most interesting thing about, like, that to me is the most interesting report out there, because it's not coming from an analyst, it's coming from a team employee. But the most interesting thing he said to me was that the Lions picked their guys, and, you know, he even called it, like, Patriot-esque, and they don't, you know, he said, the Lions picked their guys, and they're not going to care what anyone says about them. And to me, that's almost a plus. Like, obviously, any comparison to the Patriots is going to be a plus. And them staying true to their own board and having their own opinion on these guys, that to me is obviously a good sign.
I think that's what matters the most, is that they got the guys that they wanted. And, I mean, there was an admission from Bob Quinn that said, you know, there were some times that players were taken before them. I imagine that they wanted somebody in the third round that maybe necessarily didn't fall to them, and that's why they traded back in the third round and ended up with Galladay, and that was still a guy that they wanted. But maybe they were eyeing somebody else until he went off the board in the third round. You have to be happy, I think, with just the way that they're drafted. You know, like you mentioned, like it just managed to check off so many different needs, and they were able to build so much depth on defense especially, and they did prioritize some you know, offensive positions that I thought were, you know, that definitely warranted to be prioritized. They needed another tight end. They eventually did pick up Eric Ebron's option, which we haven't discussed yet, correct? Right?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah. So I'm sure we can get into that a little bit later. But, you know, by getting Michael Roberts, they have a guy who, you know, maybe he'll never be a tight end number one necessarily, but he'll always be, like, a reliable option. And, you know, even getting a wide receiver, you know, I think that was really important. And clearly, I think the ship has sailed on Anquan Boldin. I don't think I would count on Anquan Boldin being a Detroit Lion next year.
No, I talked with Jeremy about this here. I think you said, Jeremy, that the exit time we're probably going to see for Boldin is going to be after report to camp, I think.
Well, it'll be after OTAs. I think last year he signed either in late July or August, and that's about the time training camp starts. So, yeah, right before training camp is probably when you will see him make a decision. At this point, I think the last time the Lions talked to him was back in March. So I wouldn't, like Ryan, I'm not optimistic that anything's going to happen. And at this point, you know, obviously you'd still take him if he's interested, but the Lions have obviously prepared a contingency plan if he doesn't come back.
You think he might have told them already he's probably not coming back, or you think he doesn't know?
I think it's still a business at the end of the day, so I don't think that he would I don't think he'd put himself into a corner like that. Like, mm-hmm. Obviously he's going to pick wherever he wants to go, but I don't think he would ever just eliminate, you know, a possible option. I think he'd want to keep everything on the table. But I thought it was interesting that Michael Roberts took number 80.
Yeah, that was kind of an interesting little point there, because that's Bolden's number right now, I believe. Yeah.
Yeah, it was last year. And I don't think that's like any kind of like writing on the wall necessarily. But I think with them getting Michael Roberts and drafting Kenny Galladay in the third round and how highly they've spoken of Jace Billingsley, I think that the ship has kind of sailed on Boldin in Detroit. Thanks for the memories, though.
It was a fun year. Do you think receiver is still a big need at this point? Because the way the depth chart looks right now is not exactly promising, I would say, at least for this year.
Alex, would you like to answer that?
Yeah, I mean, there's really not that many, like, even though we drafted Kenny Galladay, there's still not much depth for outside receivers. So if you think about it, like, when we're in three wide receiver sets,
Which is a lot of the time,
yeah. You got your X receiver and your Z receiver, which is probably going to be Kenny Galladay and Marvin Jones, because Kenny Galladay really only has to beat out, like, Jared Aberderis, which I can't really say right now. Who else? Like, Ryan Spadola, TJ Jones. Like, there's just really not many names behind those three guys. And even though everybody thinks, myself included, that maybe that's a reach for Kenny Galladay in the third round, like, he's going to have an easy time getting on the field ahead of those guys.
Do you think there's a chance that the Lions go away from the three wide receiver sets as often now that they have, like, two potentially starting tight ends?
I don't think so. I think that's just going to be a staple of their offense. I mean, maybe Ebron will line up less traditionally as, like, a, you know, as a tight end, and they might start doing some other stuff with him now that it seemingly was, because didn't it seem like last year that Ebron and Boldin like that they would best operate like in the same exact spot, but obviously you can't have two human beings in the same spot, so you know, doing the same thing. So I think that maybe they're comfortable with transitioning Ebron to more of that spot, especially because they have Roberts and they have you know, Darren Fells. Right. So that they have some options with that too.
So yeah, like what's to stop them from starting the season with Ebron essentially as a slot receiver, Darren Fells as your tight end that's pretty much in there every snap, and then wait for Galladay and Roberts to kind of get their footing.
Yeah, you could have Ebron in the slot, or you could have Peyton in the slot, and you can keep Ebron on the outside, because, I mean, we've heard from national guys saying that Ebron is one of the most improved route runners in the NFL right now. Like, he just keeps getting better and better, and we saw him play enough on the outside last year, so they have a lot of options.
And something that always kind of stuck out to me from the very onset of free agency, there was an article that Bill Barnwell from ESPN came out with talking about possible free agent targets for teams, and he mentioned Kendall Wright, and I was totally sold on Kendall Wright because it seemed like he was another guy who was a piece that could be maneuvered around, like he could fit different roles playing outside or especially in the slot. And Detroit, you know, like we mentioned earlier and Alex mentioned, the Lions line up in a three wide receiver formation like a lot, like the fourth most of any team in the NFL. They had 732 snaps last year where they ran three wide receiver formation. And one name that we didn't even really mention yet was Jace Billingsley. And do I think that Jace Billingsley is a guy who's gonna, you know, get a lot of time? No, but I definitely see him actually being worked out of the field this year, maybe in some capacity. Whether or not it just still remains to be special teams to eventually move him into that position. But when it's a question of whether or not they have depth, Jeremy, they weren't really cultivating any of it, because they lost Calvin, and that kind of put him at odds, because I would say that when they had Calvin and Golden Tate, like they had like probably one of the more formidable duos of like any team in the NFL. I would stack that up against just about anybody else's two wide receivers. But when Calvin leaves and then you replace him with Marvin Jones, well, now it's like, okay, now we're going to like spread the ball around. So I don't see three wide receiver formations going away. And losing Bolden, it's just going to ask for other guys to step up. And it sounds like some of these other guys might be able to step up and contribute, like Galladay or Billingsley.
Okay, what else do we have here? Other notes that we have here. Jay Cutler's finally retired. Took you long enough, Jay. What? What was that?
Go back in podcast history. I called it.
Yes, Nostradamus Ryan Matthews here. Nostradamus Matthews.
Captain Leo Davidson.
He hasn't filed his retirement papers yet.
He's going. Is he going to what station is he going to again?
Fox. All capital letters. Okay. FOX.
I believe his first duties as an announcer is going to be a Bears preseason game. Actually,
I remember seeing a quote earlier in the week. It was like right when the news broke that he was late last week. Somebody asked him about how it was, because I think he just had a child, which is kind of weird how Matthew Stafford and Jay Cutler's lives are like running these two parallels. Hopefully they don't follow the same career trajectory as quickly as Cutler devolved. But like, somebody asked him how like being at home with the baby was, because his wife is off doing things, and like Cutler's response was like, it's alive. Like the baby's alive.
Wasn't there that one text that got out from Cutler's wife that was like, need you home right now. One of the kids is crying. I can't control them. I am about to leave. Wasn't that like I remember this being a thing.
I don't know.
That sounds vaguely familiar.
That sounds like something that would happen to Jay Cutler in his life. Sounds like
what? She's just going to leave the kid? Like, what does that even mean?
They're rich.
If you don't
they
get here,
babysitters.
I'm just
going to
leave the baby by its own.
Come on, like, but doesn't that just sound like the Chicago Bears? Like, Jay Cutler, we need you. And he's like, no, I'm just going to ride this exercise bike in the NFC Championship. You guys are on your own.
And then the Bears just left.
How did the Bears do in 2016? They were alive.
They were alive.
They were alive.
That's actually debatable.
Citation needed. Yeah, yeah.
They were a little bit more alive in one of the games that we faced them. Or we were. Or,
no.
Were they just more dead, alive, though. Or we were more dead? Yeah,
we were more dead. We were more dead.
I have a serious football question though. isn't Jay Cutler better than any of the quarterbacks that are on the New York Jets roster right now? Do they really want Sam Darnold like that bad?
He's better than any Browns quarterback. He's better than any Houston quarterback.
Bite your mouth.
Don't forget Jabril Peppers. They have Jabril Peppers.
Yeah, Jabril Peppers is probably QB.
Oh, that's right. I forgot he can play every position. Right.
He can. We're going to make him do place kicker when he comes to the Lions eventually. Let's take a quick break here. When we come back, we're playing our new game Over Under on the NFL Draft. We're going to be talking about some teams and activities and fun things that are maybe underrated and some that are overrated from the NFL Draft. So stick around.
Bite your mouth.
Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along. We're trying a new segment we just call Over Under, and we're kind of laughing here because I think Ryan may have provided us our future introduction for Over Under, but it's not going to be in this podcast because that's production stuff I'm not going to be able to get done. But just know that Ryan Matthews, what's the name of this person? Jesse Camp?
Jesse Camp.
Yeah, if you want his full Wikipedia bio, you don't even have to look it up. You can just ask Jeremy Reisman right now on the Pride of Detroit podcast. Who is Jesse Camp, Jeremy?
He was the winner of the first Who Wants to Be a VJ or Want to Be a VJ contest for MTV. He beat out one Dave Holmes, who pretty much went on to become more famous than him. But he, as Ryan Matthews puts it, is the most 1998 person you'll ever see and is the most emblematic of his generation than any other person in any other generation.
In history.
The 90s were really wild. Like, that's so... Oh God. Let's get to over-under. Let's... okay, so here's how this works. I'm going to be presenting the crowd here with a few subjects, be it a couple of teams, maybe a couple of different things about the draft, and their whole thing is just to say whether the thing is overrated or underrated. This is kind of the pilot test here, so let's go. All right. Over-under on... And I'm just going to pick some teams at random here. Let's go with the Baltimore Ravens and their draft class. Overrated, underrated.
Are you going to ask a specific person, or are we just going
to... Yeah, okay. So should we do this by, like, only one person gets a specific one?
I was thinking maybe pick a team, and then you give it to one person, then you pick another team for another person. But that's just
Alex, why don't you take the Ravens, then? What do you think about the Ravens?
I'm going to go with underrated because they took just about... almost every defensive player that I wanted for the Lions. I mean, like, I'm not even kidding. Like, the first four guys, all defense. You got Marlon Humphrey, awesome cornerback. Tyus Bowser, I wrote an article about him. He's awesome. He was, like, my poor man's Hassan Reddick that I wanted. Chris Wormley, I know Ryan's, like, huge on Chris Wormley. Great fit for the Lions. Tim Williams, I mean, he's all right, I guess. Sorry, Beast F-Ball.
But that's such a good value pick in the third round, though, right? Like, 78th overall for Tim Williams for a guy in, like, their defense in a 3-4. Like, don't you think that best suits him?
Yeah, like, here's the quote from Brian Billick. I'll just take a little snippet from it. Double-digit sack potential. I mean, we need pass rushing, so that would have been a great pick.
That's crazy, though.
It's hard to get double-digit sacks for, like, no matter what. Like, that's...
But, I mean, for the Ravens to go defense on their first four picks, that seems crazy to me. Like,
isn't that, like, such a Ravens thing to do, though?
It is, but I don't know, like, has their offense really been that good in a while? It doesn't seem like it to me. Maybe it's just my perception of the Ravens, that they've always been really good at defense and kind of meh on offense, but...
My perception of the Ravens has been they just don't give a shit about offense. I mean, they gave Joe Flacco a huge contract, and he's been shitty ever since, so... But, yeah... Give me any of those four defensive players. I don't care that they went offensive guard two picks in a row after that.
Let's kick this one out to Jeremy for the next one. Over and under on our hosts. Actually, you know what? No, let's save the Eagles for a little bit later. I kind of tipped which I'm giving you. But I'm going to give you a different one. Someone on the Detroit Lions schedule. Over under the New Orleans draft class, which includes Marshawn Lattimore, Ryan Ramczyk, Marcus Williams, Alvin Kamara. What do you think? Over or under?
I mean, it's hard to say a draft class that includes, what is it, six picks in the first three rounds as overrated. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go underrated. They filled a lot of needs in this draft.
NFL.com, by the way, putting this as the number two draft class overall.
Yeah, I mean, this is a really good draft class for a team that's like that's kind of under the radar, been rebuilding for a couple of years now, ever since they kind of blew everything up when they traded away Jimmy Graham that year, which I think was, what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago?
2014, I think, yeah.
Yeah, so this is like, this has all the looks of a rebuild draft to me. Picking up a potential number one corner, Marshawn Lattimore, right away. Picking up Alvin Kamara deep into the third round. Even Alex Anzalone was a guy that we talked about a little bit at linebacker in the third round. And then, yeah, I mean,
love that guy with his big blonde mane of hair.
Yeah, and we always talk about how this New Orleans defense has been horrible, right? And so in the first three rounds, they pick up 1, 2, 3, 4 guys on defense. I'd say the most risky of them being that last one, Trey Hendrickson, coming from Florida Atlantic. Probably going to take a little bit of time to adjust to the NFL coming from Florida Atlantic. But there's heart. I mean, the fact that they only have one pick after the third round doesn't bother me that much, because at that point you're just building guys that are potentially going to, you know, maybe be a rotational guy, but mostly be special teams guys. This team needed starters, and it potentially got 4 or 5, maybe not in this year, but in the upcoming years.
All right, Ryan, over under on the Kansas City Chiefs draft class.
Man, I know that not only myself, but you are also a big fan of the Kansas City Chiefs draft.
I think we all are.
They did pay a pretty hefty price tag to move up to number 10 to take their future franchise quarterback, but not only did they get Patrick Mahomes, who, just based on his athleticism and his arm, which can, like, moonlight as a cannon on Sundays and Mondays, and even on Thursday nights, they got Tano Pasanio, and they got Kareem Hunt.
My man!
Like, those were probably, like, the three guys I had, like, the biggest crush on during draft season, and they just wrapped them up and put them onto one draft class. Like, that's just not fair. I mean, they got somebody for everybody on this podcast, okay? They drafted a guy from Georgia Southern, so there's one for Chris, even though he's big-time in love with Patrick Mahomes. They drafted Tano for me. They drafted Kareem Hunt for Alex. They drafted Jehu Chesson for Jeremy. I mean, they...
And then a USC guy for Chris again.
Yeah. And, no, that guy was for all of us, because his name is Leon McQuay III, and he would have won the name bracket tournament if he would have been a Detroit Lion. So, I'm just saying, from, like, a pure, like, I don't know, just from, like, a pure athletic standpoint, I think that they had, like, one of the most impressive drafts.
All right, Alex, I'm going to start moving on some other stuff here soon, but Alex, number one overall, according to NFL.com, was the Philadelphia Eagles. So, I mean, it's kind of hard to say underrated here, but is it as good as number one, overrated or underrated?
Number one, how can I even say that's underrated if they're number one?
But like, are they? I guess do they deserve the number one rating?
I would say overrated. I really love that draft class, but when I look at that Saints team, which like those top five guys that Jeremy listed might be like some of my top five like favorite prospects from the draft. Like all of those guys, I love. Derek Barnett at number 14 was a good pick for them because they need an edge rusher, but I don't really love Barnett that high. Like, he's not a great athlete, and I think when you draft a guy that high who's a poor athlete, I would say, it's kind of an iffy pick. Sidney Jones in the second round, I love Sidney Jones. I know that Achilles injury is real scary, but if he can recover from that, like, that kid's going to be a total stud. Rasul Douglas is an okay pick. Donnell Pumphrey, like, he's all right, but I really love like Tariq Cohen to the Eagles. I think he would have been a real nice Sproles replacement, but I think he went a little higher than Pumphrey, so they couldn't luck out on him. Sheldon Gibson, really good deep threat. And then the two guys after that, like, I'm not too crazy about, so I don't know if they're the number one draft class.
Yeah. Jeremy, this was good enough for number three for NFL.com, but the New England Patriots only had 4 draft picks. But that 4 draft picks included Derek Rivers and Antonio Garcia. Yeah, overrated, I mean, underrated?
I mean, I don't know how you can rate them that high with not only just 4 picks, but no picks in the first 82 of the draft. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous to me. Like, well, you have to say this class is overrated.
So this is just kind of like a fundamental question too, though, Jeremy, but would you consider the guys that they got in return for those draft picks, would you consider them part of, like, their draft day haul? So, like, I mean, they traded number 32 and they got Brandon right. Cooks. And then they right. traded their second round pick, right, and they got Coney Ealy.
I think that's right, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, if you mix that in, and you really should count that. You're absolutely right, that should count, because it's what they use their draft capital on, it counts.
Yeah.
And that definitely makes things look a lot better. And I will say, for the draft picks that they have, two of those guys were guys that I was eyeing for the Lions. Derek Rivers, I think we all were hoping was about to fall one more pick, or two more picks, I think, to the Lions mm-hmm. before they had to trade down. So that one hurt a bit. And then I think we were all talking about Dietrich Wise a little bit later in the draft and hoping he was fall to the Lions at some point, but the Lions obviously never got their edge rusher. And so the Patriots made the most of their picks, and I don't mind them spending draft picks on, you know, actual players that are established in the NFL. I think that's something that people are a little too afraid to do and don't do enough, but I would still say this reeks of people saying, oh, the Patriots did things out of the box, so that means they did it well.
All right, let's go on some individual players and actions that happened. Ryan, I know this is core to you because this is, I don't know, we've been kind of dealing with the fallout from this. Overrated, underrated, just whatever you want about this, the Bears trading up from 3 to 2. Overrated or underrated?
You can take it from any angle,
from the 49ers angle, from the Bears angle. Is this whole thing overrated, underrated?
I have to say that this is underrated. The Bears moving up is so underrated because it has given us a running gag until, I don't know, the end of at least my lifetime. So I don't know how this, I don't know how this can be anything other than underrated. They traded up one spot to get a guy that they didn't need to trade up one spot to get to. It's completely broken Robert Zaglinski from Windy City Gridiron. Like, he's a broken shell of himself on Twitter. If you want to follow him, find him.
It's been funny
thing is, like, the other day I typed in Ryan Pace into the search bar on Twitter, and like two of the top five tweets were from Robert Zaglinski, because he's just like constantly defending Ryan Pace for taking Trubisky. And if you search Trubisky, like more like Zaglinski tweets come up, and it's just, I feel so.
God, he's a mess.
I almost said that I feel so bad for the Bears, but I feel so, so good for the rest of us. So this was such an underrated move.
I think the rest of their draft is almost just as bad, too. Like, I don't like anything about their draft.
The Bears, maybe, you mean, yeah.
I was
the Bears,
laughing yeah. too hard about, like, that pick and that move up that I didn't even pay attention to the rest of the draft, honestly. Although I do like Tariq Cohen, but that's about it.
All right, Alex, another player for you to go over, under, and kind of in the same vein, but very controversial player. For the 49ers, their second pick, number 31 overall, Reuben Foster. Overrated or underrated?
Oh my gosh. Well, I would say it's overrated because he's probably not even going to play for a year. Like, it seems like they did so much research on Reuben Foster only for it to come back that they were just completely wrong about him. Like, how dumb are they?
And, like, how are a lot of people going to, like, praise John Lynch for, yes, he did fleece the Bears, but he was going to take Reuben Foster
at number 2.
Yeah.
No, at number 3, if he had traded back, he thought the Bears were going to trade up, take Solomon Thomas. He's like, all right, at number 3, I'm going to take Reuben Foster.
Right, like, he would have taken Reuben Foster at 3 if Solomon Thomas was off the board.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they were completely fine with knowing that he wouldn't play for a year, and they were going to do that? Oh, man, hold Yikes. On. So I have an over and under for Jeremy now.
Okay, let's do it.
Yeah, let's keep going.
Over under for Jeremy. Which is a more intriguing subplot? Mitchell Trubisky getting picked number 2nd and having to wait and sit a year, or Reuben Foster sitting and waiting a year for the 49ers?
I guess I would say Reuben Foster, because I think the plan from the get-go for the Bears was to have him sit a year. And, I mean, obviously you kind of have to with what you're paying your quote-unquote starter. Reuben Foster, I don't think the 49ers thought, and let's be clear, it's not set in stone that Reuben Foster is going to miss his entire rookie year. That's it. There are just kind of rumors out there that says his shoulder surgery didn't stick. He's going to need a second one. That hasn't been confirmed yet. I think John Lynch said worst case scenario is he misses a year, but he's 100% fine after that. Like, it's not a lingering issue type of thing. So that to me is more interesting. Like, if that's true, that he didn't know that, and that it turns out to be Reuben Foster misses his entire rookie year, like, that's a pretty huge deal. I don't think it's necessarily a huge deal for a quarterback, since we've seen it happen plenty of times before.
All right, let's go on to some other features from this. Jeremy, you want to take another over-under, or should I just skip ahead to Ryan? You just did that.
Whatever.
All right, let's have you take this one. Over-under, I'm going to move on to some other features here. I mean, we saw Corey Davis go 5 overall. This was a big year for the MAC. We saw the Lions take a couple of MAC players. But strength of competition, people talking about the Power 5. You got to come from the Power 5. The Power 5, for those not familiar with college football, that's designated as like the SEC, the ACC, the Big 10, the Big 12, the Pac-12, and Notre Dame. It's kind of like that, the Power 5 conferences plus Notre Dame or whatever. Overrated, underrated, coming from those kind of big schools.
That's really hard to me, because it really, really depends on the school and what kind of offense and defense they run. Because you think of a guy like Storm Norton, who the Lions is an undrafted free agent the Lions picked up. Really tall dude. He came from Toledo, MAC school. But he played in this weird offense that doesn't really translate to NFL style at all. And in that case, I think it is a big deal. Like, that's why he probably wasn't drafted, despite his crazy physical skills. And, obviously his game has some faults to it too. But if you're in a 2-point stance instead of the normal 3-point stance in the NFL, that's a huge adjustment. But I think this year is also a good reason to admit that maybe small school thing is kind of disappearing. We're also getting a lot more tape on these small school teams as, you know, TV deals expand and we see more games on Saturdays and Fridays and Thursdays. Like, suddenly we're all a little more familiar about these guys, so we kind of can pick apart their game a little more intensely and know what's better. So if I had to pick one, I would say it's probably a little overrated still. I think it's a little bit of an old man's type of thinking, but there is some validity to it still too.
All right, I'm gonna go to Ryan on this next one here. Over under 40 yard dash time.
It's overrated when it comes to the Lions second round draft pick Jalen Tabor. It's definitely underrated when it comes to me beating Alex in the 40 yard dash in Philly.
I beat you at the vert, and I got the 10-yard split on you, so I'm 2 for 3.
I'm sorry that he interrupted, Chris, but your question was originally about 40-yard dash times, correct?
Yes, it was. Okay. It was. All right.
And I sufficiently answered it in two ways. I added some context to it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep, you're good.
Okay. Over. I believe it's Alex's turn.
It is. I'm just trying to think of one for him. You want to take another draft class here, Alex, before I close it out?
Yeah, I'll take the vert jump.
That wasn't the Arizona Cardinals.
Yeah, so I got a 35 inch vert, and then Ryan had a 32.5, and I beat him pretty handily.
Objection. So objection. Objection.
Underrated.
Objection.
I have to pound the gavel on this, man.
Arizona Cardinals.
Never mind.
Underrated. Because Hassan Reddick fell all the way to number 13. Absolute stud. Buda Baker, 36 overall. Great pick. I have no idea who Chad Williams is. I didn't even know Grambling State was a football team. Great pick.
It is. Of course it is. HBCU.
Whatever. TJ Logan.
One of the legendary.
I'm still talking. TJ Logan, round 5. I wanted him so badly for the Lions because we could really use some speed in the backfield. That is a fantastic pick. Underrated.
And real quick, one word to all you guys. Overrated, underrated, the Lions draft class.
Underrated.
I think the amount of stink that's being made about it is overrated.
I think it's a little overrated. I'm scared.
Oh.
You think the class itself is overrated?
Not so fearless leader, Jeremy Reisman.
Bold prediction.
Hey, here's the thing. I've been surrounded by Lions fans, you know, I'm going through comments and sections and stuff, and I just see people who are originally low on this class immediately kind of change their tune after a couple days.
That's what happens every year, though, right?
It's every year, yeah. Every yeah. single year.
I'm just saying, there are some concerns to be had, and I think this is mostly being properly rated because you see some people that are like, this is horrible, and some people are like, hey, the Lions actually addressed their needs. Maybe they're really good now. It's somewhere in the middle.
No, I was waiting for you to say those two words. I'm cautiously optimistic.
Those are three words, you idiot.
Well, I'm cautiously optimistic about this this segment's future. But I think we should leave it there and move on to the list cast. We got a great one coming up for you right now, so stick around.
Two, three, four, five, six, seven, eight, nine.
All right, let's start our list cast. Pride of Detroit podcast rolls along here, and it's list cast time. The music means it's time for the list cast. Let's list cast. This one was pretty spontaneous. We thought we were going to take a break from list cast this week. Unfortunately, as with all things list cast, you cannot escape it. It is here. It is eternal. This one comes in basically by a mailbag question from our friends, the New York Times, who recently posed the question to us, to Pride of Detroit. Our film critics want to know, what do you think is the best action movie of the 21st century so far? And immediately after this came out, we started litigating on this. And before we knew it, we knew we had to do a list cast. But I feel like our litigation, we need to lay this out because I know, Ryan, you and I, we were debating about superhero movies, whether they are action films or not. I think we've agreed that they are.
Yeah, I think they have to be just because of the internet. Because if you type in action films into Google, it pops up a picture of the Avengers movie. So,
right. I mean, they're everywhere now, and they're kind of just... they've got their claws into everything. They are action. I just don't think their action is that great. So my top 10 does not, my top 5, I should say, does not have any in
there. If you include the Avengers in your top 5 anyway, without any stipulations, then you're just a very boring person.
You're police.
I would know. I haven't seen the Avengers movie yet, and I wasn't that interested in it because it didn't have Spider-Man in it. So that's why I didn't see the other Avengers movie. But that's why I was first in line to go see Civil War.
I am already so checked out of this with all the mentions of superhero movies already.
Jeremy is going to be useless in this list cast.
To me, action movies are just such filler, and like, I just never waste my time at the theater to go see them because they feel so monotonous to me.
Oh,
and
I'm just not interested. Cut me a break, dude. He's just like, I'm a Kelly boy, so I'm into these art house films.
Yep.
Really? Hold on, Jeremy. I want to know how many film festivals have you gone to?
Zero.
Liar. How many films did you see at the art theater in Ann Arbor?
Zero. The one time I went there, they were doing, I think they played Young Frankenstein. They redistributed that or whatever.
Right, yeah, a black and white film. Mr. Haughty Toddy, Jeremy Reisman, went to go see a highbrow black and white film.
This is a little awkward. I have actually gone to more film festivals than Jeremy.
Yeah, what up now?
Yeah.
Well, you're moving to California, so it only makes sense.
Let's get to the list cast. Who wants to start? I've got a lot here, but...
why don't you just run down your 10 through 6 right now, since you just went overboard...
Yeah, I did kind of go overboard. I could not stop it at just 5, so I'm going to run off my 10 through 6 real quick. Number 10 is Crank, because I need to have a Jason Statham movie in here.
Ooh, I think this is his best movie. One.
Number 9 is Casino Royale. Daniel Craig as Bond, amazing. It was really tough between this and Skyfall.
Not to be confused with Daniel Bryan.
Yeah, I made that mistake in Slack. Jesus Christ. Number 8 is John Wick. Awesome.
Too low.
Number 7 is one of my favorite Hong Kong movies from 2000, Full Time Killer. And number 6 is Fast 5. We need to have one of the Fast and Furious movies in here. So should I do 4 and 5 now?
You should take it all the way to 1.
Sure.
Number 5. Kill Bill Volume 1. I never really liked this movie that much when it came out, but as far as just straight up action and the sequences it is, you can talk a lot about, a lot of this was just taken from, other Japanese movies or other action films out there. That's kind of the point. These movies synthesize off of one another. That never lets us stop talking about, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and all the great Western films that riff off of Kurosawa. That's what Kill Bill was. It was basically, it was Tarantino trying his hand in an action film, and the sequences were great. They were amazing. Uma Thurman was great, and half the movie is one long action sequence. I don't know how you can really argue with that. Number 4, this movie changed action films as we know it, just how they were shot in their cinematography, and that's The Bourne Identity, which, by the way, all these movies are from 2000 onward. Forgot to say that earlier. But yeah, The Bourne Identity, again, you can feel however you want about The Bourne. What is it now? Is it a trilogy, a quadrilogy, a series?
There's 5 of them.
There's 5 of them, a quintology.
Depends on if you count right? Jeremy Renner's Bourne.
A sextology?
Yeah, I like it.
Can we do a quick poll? How many of us have seen a Jason Bourne movie?
I've seen all of them.
No, you haven't.
I don't think that's true.
Yes, I have.
I thought like 2 months ago you had seen none of them.
You watched it? You have a marathon? Did you have a Jason Bourne marathon, Ryan?
Well, the old ball and chain left one day, and I just watched all 5 of them in one sitting.
There you go. I've only ever seen Bourne Identity.
I'll be damned.
I saw the newest one.
You saw the Bourne Identity listed as your number 4 movie, action movie, since 2000, and you just didn't bother to see any of the other ones?
I didn't have really much. Look, law of sequels. I was still operating in the law of sequels.
Okay.
If it's a sequel to an action franchise, you're probably not going to be incredibly disappointed. So I never caught up with it. That's the thing. Bourne kind of turned into a franchise when I wasn't looking. So, like Ryan, I'm going to have to cram it one day. Ryan, do you want to take us on your 5 and 4?
Yeah. Number 5 is actually the latest Jason Bourne film called Jason Bourne. I'll let you know that as the series kind of progresses, like, they just get better, except for the one with Renner. although, I didn't like this latest one just because Matt Damon doesn't get enough respect. Like, he would honestly just be Leonardo DiCaprio if he would have had the same opportunities and chances, but I won't go down that road.
Oh my god.
Number 4 is The Bourne Legacy.
I know where this is going.
Do you want to just run through all 5 of yours right now?
What do you think? No, I don't. I want to go in list cast order. So 5 was Jason Bourne, 4 was The Bourne Legacy. I just wasn't that big of a fan of the Jeremy Renner one, but, like, I don't know. I just wanted to give him his due respect. Like, I didn't want to put his 5th, because I feel like that'd be a huge slight at a guy who was in another great action film, The Avengers, which I also have not seen.
Oh, God, that just took a lot out of me right there.
Do you have a bot? You have
you had
a
both
10
of those?
6, or?
You had both of those on your list, too, Alex?
Jesus Christ.
Not even going to acknowledge Ryan right now. Let me start off with my honorable mention here first.
God.
Number 6, I have Fast and Furious. The best Fast and Furious movie, which was
Tokyo Drift.
Tokyo Drift.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That one doesn't have the Rock in it, though.
All the haters can keep hating, but
how much better would Tokyo Drift be if they could, like, CGI the Rock into, like, a re-release?
Put Dwayne Johnson in.
He would be just as out of place as Bow Wow was in Tokyo Drift.
Was he Bow Wow at that point, or was he Lil Bow Wow?
I think he was actually Bow Wow. I think he made his transition to Bow Wow.
How much better would the Fast and Furious movies be if there was like a little score bug in the top left corner that showed you how many cylinders were on screen at this moment?
As long as it wasn't a crowded score bug, then Ryan would hate it if it was.
I don't want to send any of our listeners down this rabbit hole, but whoever can find out the scene in which you can see the most amount of cylinders on screen in a Fast and Furious movie gets 1,000 bonus points and automatically gets promoted to friend of the show.
Oh no.
That, or you know how like some movies have a body count, like someone goes in and counts all the people that are killed?
Count all the
Can
cylinders.
Someone count the amount of cylinders in a movie?
The total amount of cylinders. Okay. Number five. This one's for Chris Lemieux. I have number five as The Dark Knight.
I knew this was coming.
Chris's favorite movie. Very action-y, very good. Not overrated at all. Your thoughts, Chris?
Gets you number four.
All right. Number four, I have Kill Bill Volume 1. Like Chris said, the action is great. I also like the soundtrack a lot. Soundtrack a lot for that movie is very good. Yeah, I think you've about covered all the good things about that movie, though. So.
I just want to take
Uma Thurman.
I want to take umbrage real quick with number five, because like I like The Dark Knight, but it's not an action film.
It's an action film.
I don't think it is. Like there aren't enough action sequences in it.
Would you say, Ryan, because this is the thing, like I think you're right, but I think there's a lot more action in what would you say like Batman Begins and Dark Knight Rises? Are those action films or
Rises,
are they still
I would agree. I don't think Batman Begins, I don't think so though. That was kind of maybe even less action if I remember.
The Christopher Nolan ones are a little difficult because they're just not formulaic like the Marvel movies are. You can classify the Marvel movies absolutely as action films because there's enough action to them, but DC's kind of the Nolan Batman movies are a little harder to nail down.
Well, yeah, just because
all those start with like a very intense action scene, right? Pretty much.
Yeah, The Dark Knight starts with Joker and his goons like shooting up some bank.
Yep, and then.
Then you got like the motorcycle chase
the
scene,
airplane
you got the
one,
pencil
right?
trick. I mean, that's enough action for me.
Pencil trick is action.
Hell no, yeah, dude! That was badass.
Wow.
Shut
okay,
up.
Okay, all right. So, When Harry Met Sally is an action film now.
Get your number four, Alex.
No, we did. That was Kill Bill.
That's right.
Jeremy's
turn. Jeremy.
All right, my number five, which I just came up with about 2 minutes ago, Snowpiercer. I enjoyed that film a little bit. I only saw it because it was on Netflix, but I heard good things about it, and it's interesting. It's kind of a different take on most action films. It kind of had the feel of like a video game, like they would go from one room, kill the major boss, and then go on to the next room. So I kind of like that.
I can get behind it, yeah.
And then my number four is kind of crossing genres here, Shaun of the Dead. I think that movie's fucking great. Anything with any Edgar Wright movie is great, but this one, it started off my kind of love affair with his movies, and it's a perfect movie in terms of zombie movies, which I'm not a huge fan of. And it even has like, I'm really sensitive when it comes to gory stuff, which is probably why I don't like this genre too much. But there's a pretty graphic scene where like a guy gets torn apart in half, and it doesn't hurt the movie at all, in my opinion, because it's so good.
I was kind of torn on what you were talking about there as far as Shaun of the Dead, because I love that movie. But again, when I'm making all of our lists, I feel are kind of a little weird and different in this way. So number three for me, what? All right, number three for me, going international, because I feel like if you're doing this list, I mean, this was a good 17, 18 years for Asian action films. Like, they've always been great, but like, there were a lot that didn't even make on this list. Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon. I had to knock off Hero because I wanted to keep Jason Statham on here. But at number three, The Raid. And The Raid 2 is almost as good as well. Like, the two Raid movies, if you haven't seen them, they're awesome. They're high octane. They're everything you want out of an action movie. And it rules. That's really about it. Number two, no action movie list for the 21st century would be complete, without a Tom Cruise movie. And no, it's not Mission Impossible. It's Edge of Tomorrow, which is rightfully getting a sequel, and it will be awesome as Edge of Tomorrow was. I argued this with Kent earlier. Edge of Tomorrow is one of those weird movies where you see the trailers for it, you see Tom Cruise is in it, you see like the premise, and you think this is going to be insanely stupid. But if you ever actually watch the movie, it's so good. It is so good. It's everything you want out of an action movie. Edge of Tomorrow, number two.
Tom Cruise is just underrated in general.
Massively underrated.
Because the Mission was impossible.
That movie is the like rebirth movie that got renamed Live, Die, Repeat, right?
Yeah, it was Live, Die, Repeat, and then it became Edge of Tomorrow. Yeah, yeah. Okay. It's a sci-fi movie where it's like aliens are invading and he.
All right, so because the sequel is never better than the first one, number three is The Bourne Supremacy.
God damn it.
I really like the direction that the franchise was heading in, but then my number two film was The Bourne Identity, which was pretty good, but not better than my number one film. And I'll save you guys the... I'll save you guys a surprise for later, but I'm like stuck between my normal voice and Jesse Camp, so I'm just gonna leave it at that.
God damn it. All right, who was next? Was it Alex or Jeremy? I can't.
I don't know, man. I can go, though.
Go for it.
Go ahead, please.
All right, number three.
Right now.
I don't think any of you guys have this on your list, because I don't know why, but Kingsman. Anybody like the Kingsman? Secret Service? Anybody even see that movie here, other than me?
I have no idea what that is.
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Wasn't it by one of the guys who directed one of the X-Men movies?
Brian Singer. I think it was directed by Brian Singer. Didn't Brian Singer direct?
Miller.
Never mind. Nope. I'm wrong.
Okay, anyway, so this movie was fantastic because there was a church scene where Colin Firth kills about 58 people in less than 4 minutes, including, like, chopping some lady in the neck.
Oh, wow.
Stabbing another woman. Yeah, it was pretty brutal, and I would consider that action-y, definitely. And Samuel Jackson also talks with a lisp in that movie, so it's pretty entertaining. Number two is Casino Royale. That was what, your number eight, Chris?
Yeah, it was on my, like, 10 to 6. No, it was number 9 for me, but yeah.
That's gotta be top 5, man. I mean,
is Daniel, that the best of those? Is that
Daniel
the
Bryan is the best of the Bonds, if that's what you were about to say.
I was gonna say, is that the best of the Daniel Craig movies? For you.
I would say so. It's also his first movie, and Ava Green was also in that movie. I don't know.
How would you rank those? Would you go like Casino Royale, Skyfall?
Oh, Casino Royale and Skyfall are both top two. They're pretty hard to rank against each other, but I like Casino Royale more. Quantum Solace kind of sucked big time. Spectre was also good, but I mean,
yeah,
they had Christoph Waltz in there. That was he's great. Oh, they had Batista in there.
Oh, what movie is this?
Spectre. That was the last Bond movie.
Oh yeah, that one was good because it had Batista in it.
Yeah, they had David Batista in there. So, but anyway, Casino Royale number two. Yep.
Jeremy, you're 3 and 2.
Number three, Mad Max Fury Road. Pretty fun stunts in that movie. Any action movie that can go to those lengths and not use special effects and CGI, pretty damn impressive. And going into the movie knowing that makes it a lot better. I don't care that it's storyless. We're talking about action movies. The story is secondary to everything else. And number two, John Wick. Because getting shot in the head has never been so much fun.
What I love about John Wick is just how self-aware it is of what of Keanu Reeves and his acting career to that point. It is just so self-aware of who Keanu Reeves is, and it doesn't care.
That movie does not let you breathe for 1 second. Like, there are hardly any scenes that don't involve someone getting shot in the face, point blank.
Getting shot in the face through walls. Like, there's so many different ways to get shot through the face that I never realized before watching John Wick.
The only reason this isn't number one is because in the first scene they kill off a dog, and that's,
you know, I was gonna get to that. So let's wait.
Okay. I think we know what Reno's number one is.
Number one for me, to the chagrin of Alex, is Mad Max Fury Road.
Great movie.
Amazing movie. There's so much going on here. For George Miller, this is a love letter. This is something that he had been, you know, look at the directing arc of George Miller. He makes these cult classics with Mad Max, with Road Warrior, with Beyond Thunderdome. And then he's basically damned to the pits of making like children's direct to DVD CGI. Like he worked on like Babe and Happy Feet. And he finally gets it back. He gets what was that?
Those are great movie, great pieces of film in their own right, though, Chris. Like, let's not discredit Babe or Happy Feet.
Sure. But I mean, like,
you're not the target audience.
This was this was in development hell for like close to 20 years. This was his, and it was unequivocally his. No CGI, as you pointed out, like very minimal CGI, if there was any. And just the cast in here, Charlize Theron's awesome, Tom Hardy's awesome, and you strip out like a couple of scenes, and it is basically one long nonstop action sequence.
Dude, but that's all you really need. Aren't you pretty happy that it got delayed for like 20 years though? Because you were able to substitute Mel Gibson for Tom Hardy, which I think is a win in and of itself.
Massive upgrade from Mel Gibson, who I think is very overrated. But like everything, it worked out so perfectly. I've seen this movie in theaters like 3 times.
But they made a woman a hero. How could they do that?
Dude, it's Charlize Theron. She's fucking badass.
I'm kidding, by the way, just in case there are female listeners out here. I'm kidding.
No, I remember that was kind of a thing going around the internet when it came out.
I can't believe
it. She's not the Road Warrior. Is that Jesse Camp or Jeremy Reisman? My ears just hit me.
Jeremy Camp.
All right, hit us through number one, Ryan. I know what's coming.
Oh, it's my turn?
Yeah.
Guardians of the Galaxy.
So my number one film, for action films, mind you, is Planet of the Apes, starring Mark Wahlberg, directed by Tim Burton. Yes, Chris is checking feverently, but it was released in 2001.
2001, I just have to make sure.
Absolutely. Like, what isn't there to love in Planet of the Apes? It has one of my favorite actors in Tim Roth, and he's the leader of, like, the ape militia. And then he's got a great, great subservient, Michael Clark Duncan as his colonel. This movie also has Kris Kristofferson in it, so you can't really knock it on, you know, not having big names or great names. Paul Giamatti is an orangutan who, like, cracks jokes. I mean, there's just a lot of good stuff in here. Like, Mark Wahlberg turned down Ocean's 11 to play in this film, and his character was eventually replaced by Matt Damon. So that's how you bring in the Bourne Ultimatum in my previous four films in my list. Like, this is where this thing kind of happened. Like, can you imagine how great this film would have been, like, maybe my favorite movie of all time if Matt Damon was Captain Leo Davidson, but instead it was Mark Wahlberg. I mean,
I see on Wikipedia that the original script had Arnold Schwarzenegger starring.
Oh no.
Well, this film is basically just like, it's like,
I saw this movie. It was God.
No, I saw this movie too, and it's great.
What made you protest this list so hard? Was it because Chris didn't want to do superhero movies at first?
No, I think it's just in general, like, I didn't know how to rank my action films, just because, like, on any given day, like, the next one could be my favorite. And, like, I don't know, I understand the whole, like, let's do it post, you know, 2000, because that's what our friends at the New York Times wanted. But may I remind you that Tim Roth turned down the role of Severus Snape in Harry Potter to take this role in Planet of the Apes. So I'm just saying that a lot of cinema history was altered because of this one fantastically shit film.
We get it. You read the 10 things you didn't know about Planet of the Apes article from BuzzFeed or whatever. All right, Reno.
Alex.
God, how do I top that, man? Number one, John Wick. Yeah. I mean, it's no Planet of the Apes or whatever, sure. But if you just, like, jump 10 minutes into that movie after this dog dies, which is, like, the saddest thing ever, and I still fucking hate that part of the movie. But if you just jump in 10 minutes and just ignore that part, it is one of the greatest movies ever.
Jeremy, number one.
We already talked about it a bunch, but Kill Bill Volume 1. I was going to mention the music, but Reno got that covered. Just everything works. Like, I got obsessed with that theme song back in the day. Like, it was my pump-up song more than anything. I would listen to it before tennis matches. I'd listen to it before roller hockey. That shit got me pumped.
That's everywhere. That's one of those rare songs that enters the stadium arena music canon. It's still played out there. And Seven Nation Army.
Yeah. And the whole, like, I very, very, very rarely buy a soundtrack to a movie, but I bought that one and, like, ran that CD into obscurity. Like, it didn't work by the time I had finished it within a couple months.
The thing that fascinates me about this is that I think Kill Bill is probably overall, like, one of Tarantino's weakest film entries, but Volume 1 works so well as an action movie. And yet at the same time, Volume 2 is absolutely not an action movie. It's such a weird kind of film, like those two movies in their place, because I look at Tarantino's other works, I'm like, yeah, no, I'm watching all this shit before I'm watching Kill Bill. But then Volume 1 somehow works as this all-time great action movie because of what it accomplished. Let's move on. Let's get on to the mailbag. Coming up next.
Oh, I wasn't done talking about Planet of the Apes.
Mail time. Hashtag ask POD to get them in. Let's go to, we have no new reviews this time. This is the first. Jeremy, you've brought shame upon my house.
Listeners brought shame, not me.
Let's go to the first question here from Paulo H. Adequate host has a nice goatee and a strong shirt game. That's my notes from the draft trip you guys did. Proceed with the pod.
That was not a question.
It was not in the form of question. It is appreciated either way.
A spinoff of Adequate Host. I'm going to check your computer for multiple
accounts. Thank you, Chris's mom, for listening to the podcast.
On that note, Waybay51 asks us, of all the members of the Pride of Detroit staff, who is the weirdest?
You're really going to throw that one out there, huh?
Yep.
Do we have an answer? I have an answer. I'm not going
to say. You guys all have answers. I don't get to answer this one. I'm just the host.
I'm not sure who you could think is weirder than the guy who got on here to talk about fake dicks.
That, of course, is a reference to Jerry Mallory. A couple weeks ago.
Fake dicks and John Cena's titties.
That was probably like 30% of what Jerry talked about on that podcast. And just to be clear, it was fake units in order to circumvent being popped for drugs in your urine. So
he still haven't explained his fascination with John Cena, though.
He just has a great set of pecs.
Guess so.
Are we all on board with Jerry Mallory being the weirdest guy on the website?
I was gonna say Ryan Jesse Camp Matthews.
God.
Next question, Chris.
God. Okay, give me a second here. Josh LaFond, is he an enemy of the show or friend of the show? Does it kind of alternates with Josh?
I think he's still enemy of show status. He's got to really prove himself. I mean, okay. We don't just hand out friend of the show.
We don't. It's been over a year since Fife Dog has passed. Why was there never a list cast for his best tracks?
That's a good question.
Yeah, that is a good question, but it also has a very suitable answer, because did you just hear the list cast we just had about action movies? I think that not too many people in here would be up to date on their favorite 16s from Fife, so I know I would do it.
I could do it.
I could kick it.
Okay, Caleb Porter asks us, and you can roll your eyes at this question all you want. The possibility the Lions let Stafford play out his contract, franchise him for 2018, then find a new cheap quarterback in the draft, a la Dak.
Here's the thing.
That's a great idea.
That new quarterback's already on the roster, and his name's Brad Kaya.
0.0001. He's getting an extension this year. You guys better get used to it.
Insert dumbanddumber.jpg. So you're saying there's a chance.
Big gulps, huh?
I'm surprised we still have the people holding out waiting to see Stafford get out of town.
It's they're
0-3 in the playoffs. You just can't do it, man. Soft wins against soft opponents, can't win the big games, you know? Just can't do it, man.
It's been 1 week since you looked at me.
Yep. Ryan's drinking, in case you can't tell. Smog's Gold Coin asks us, overlooked training camp battle, Jimmy Landis versus Don Muehlbach.
Oh, who you got? Boy.
Okay, first of all, that's not overlooked.
Yeah, it has its own. It's the only camp battle that has its own hashtag.
Yeah, Long Snapper Watch 2017 is on full here at Pride of Detroit.
I would really appreciate it, though, Jeremy, if I had some type of like group to file all of my, you know, upcoming articles on that.
Yeah, you need your own group.
Your own tag.
Your own story stream.
Yeah, I would like a story stream for Long Snapper Watch 2017.
Yeah, no, this is going to be a fun one. Assuming that no one gets injured. I know I disagree with the majority of, I think, the people here, whether I'm just the only one that's willing to face reality or what, but I think this is the changing of the guard year.
Let's go to a less depressing question.
Yeah, we're talking about Fife Dog being dead, why we haven't talked about him. We're talking about Don Muehlbach being on his way out. Do we have anything that might be a little bit uplifting, Chris?
Yeah, Madrigals 2112 asks us, favorite band name? I have an answer for this one, but I'll let everyone else.
Hit us with it. No, I want to hear yours, Chris, because right. Then that'll establish a baseline for me.
Cattle Decapitation.
All right, that didn't establish any kind of baseline whatsoever, so...
All right, well, after Googling best band names, I'm going to go with Butthole Surfers.
Oh, God, I remember the Butthole Surfers.
Yep.
I think my favorite band name's got to be Jesse Camp and the 8th Street Kids.
God damn it. God damn it.
Bathtub Shitter.
Chumbawamba.
Smash Mouth.
That's an underrated name.
Of the what about the more mainstream like rock bands? I think Red Hot Chili Peppers is a really good nickname, or like a really good name for a band.
Smashing Pumpkins, does Smashing Pumpkins still make stuff?
I don't think so. Mm. There's been talks of them going on a reunion tour, but Billy Corgan just bought NWA Wrestling.
He did. I was about to bring that up. You read my mind perfectly.
Yeah, when I drink all the rules of the podcast go by the wayside, so I just brought up wrestling for the first time in a long time.
First time, long time?
I'll drink to that. Jeremy, do you have any band names you'd like to promote? Good Charlotte, Panic at the Disco, Fallout Boy.
I don't like the band at all, but I kind of like Five for Fighting as a band name. Hockey reference.
Hockey reference?
A lot of people won't get, I don't think.
It's not Jesse Camp and the 8th Street Kids, though.
All right, next question. You want to try to get on some Lions questions here? Let's see.
Do we have any?
Frankie Reno. Any relation, Alex?
Yep, that's my aunt.
That does not look like your aunt. Their display name is at Frankie Reno as well. It has an at in their display name. With addition to the offensive line, will the Lions average 100 yards a game?
No.
I'm assuming he means rushing yards. Hopefully we're averaging over 100 yards a game, but rushing yards...
I hope the Lions win precisely one playoff game and the Lions run for 99.9 yards rushing per game and everybody wants to blame the running game.
So how many yards did we average last year? I know like the year before that was like 60 something.
I think it was like mid 80s. Let me see if I can pull it up.
Oh, we're on track then.
All right, while he's pulling that up, I'm going to move on to another question
here. It's just such an arbitrary number, though. Like, 100 is such an arbitrary number. It doesn't matter how many yards per game you average. It matters how many yards per carry you average.
And by the way, like, what does that matter if, like, you make up more than enough yards through passing?
Yeah, like, how many times does Stafford throw the ball, like, to players in the backfield?
How about we just get better on defense, too? Just be a better team.
How about the middle of the field becomes less of a sieve? That's why we got Jared Davis.
Lions averaged 81.9 rushing yards per game, and about, looks like 7 or 8 teams didn't hit that 100 yards per game mark last year.
Do you have a yards per carry mark?
What's that?
You have a yards per carry mark?
For the Lions?
Yeah, because I know in training camp they were talking about how they wanted to be at, I think it was 4.2?
Don't think they got there.
No, they were 3.7.
Right, so I mean, like, even if, so they're at, like, 80-some rushing yards per game last season?
82, yep.
Yeah, and if you go from 3.7 to 4.2 per carry, like, who cares if, you know, you don't hit that 100-yard mark, but if you're getting 4.2 yards a carry on your running plays, what, first and 10 turns into second and 6?
Like, that's so much. That means in 3 carries, you're getting a first down every single time.
That math checks out, kids.
Anthony M. asks us, how many years of prime play does Stafford have left? As a Detroit fan, I fear his window closes before he gets sustained adequate help.
I think he used the word adequate, so you should answer this question, Chris.
But, like, okay, I think people really kind of, I mean, Stafford isn't that old. Yeah. Like, I think people are kind of still wigging out about his age, but, I mean... Yeah, he was, when was he drafted?
2009,
but he came out of college pretty early, if I remember.
He was young. Very young. He was a young 21-year-old, right?
Yeah, so, like, people are kind of wigging out a little too much on, like, quarterbacks, more than any position in the NFL, has pretty good amount of longevity to it.
Yeah, as long as you're good, absolutely.
And I mean, like, we just saw the first good year out of Stafford. We were all saying before that, you know, year 8 or whatever, we're saying, this is when quarterbacks tend to finally put it all together, tend to start hitting that stride. And I think you've got at least 5 or 6 prime years out of him. And that's all you can really ask for.
Tom Brady's 39 and he just won a Super Bowl.
Jay Cutler just retired at 34. So I think he's got about 5 good years left.
Well, I don't think he won't be good years. I think that's the qualifier. Yes, right. Like, he can probably drag along for about, like, 8 years, but I think it'll be 8 or 9 years before he's forced out of the league, unless we start seeing, like, you know, all-star, like, quality play out of him consistently. But I think that's where it's at.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is where the question stemmed from or not, but, like, he had a press conference either, I think it was a week ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, where... one of the reporters said, like, well, now that you're at you're past the half point of your career, and Stafford stopped him. He's like, wait, what? I'm not at the half point of my, I'm still in my 20s, buddy. And I agree with him. Like, I think he can go another 10 years at least. And,
damn.
You know, but if since the question was prime years, I think 5 or 6 is a good number for prime years. I think, I mean, his physicals, there's been no sign of any physical tools been, you know, being decreased, and we saw him last year being probably the most physical and athletic runner we've ever seen him be. So, like, I think right now he's definitely peak Stafford, and I think that'll last at least another 5 years.
And don't you think just, like, quarterback in terms of longevity is going to increase as the league becomes obviously more, like, quarterback-oriented and more quarterback-friendly? I mean, like, even the guys who, like, kind of, like, weathered the storm, like Peyton Manning and whatnot, like, those guys were part of, like, you know, a different era almost. Like, we were still transitioning into this, like, quarterback, pass-happy, protect the quarterback, like, no hitting below the legs, no hitting below the helmet, like... Or hitting
quick
above
passes
the shoulders,
too, right? Like,
yeah,
getting the ball out quick so your quarterback's not getting hit as often.
Not to mention, we keep improving the offensive line in terms of pass blocking too. So, I mean, like, he's probably not going to get hit as hard as he has in the past in the upcoming year.
Stafford's got 15 years left, approximately.
All right, next question. Joseph R. Sweeney 5 wants to know: does anyone watch Red Zone Replay? Sometimes it's a good fix for that football needs to be on, it's Sunday feeling.
I don't know what that is.
I'm not really aware of what that is either. Is it just
is it on the NFL Network? Is it just like highlights from the season from Red Zone?
Maybe. I mean, that's a big no, I guess.
That's the thing. Like, none of us really jones for football too badly here. Like, I will watch.
That's absolutely not true.
I mean, okay, so we jones for football, but we find ways to cope. We're not just losing our minds where we have to go, like, rewatch tape on Sunday.
Yeah, I don't think that's happening here. Like, don't get me wrong, I totally agree with Jeremy. Like, I jones for football, especially, like, on the weekends. I don't know. It's just kind of, like, conditioned at this point. But at the same time, like, overtime playoff hockey is a hell of a drug, and that'll get me to where I need to be.
I mean, between playoff basketball and a little bit of baseball and, of course, you know, the other leagues of football I will watch every now and then that people will slag on me for, I'm okay until we can at least get college football back.
I mean, if we want to take this whole, like, sports as a drug analogy, like, further, I mean, baseball is definitely a downer, because if I take in some baseball, I'm sleeping on the couch, like, within a few minutes, just because it's that kind of sport. Yeah. What would you guys consider playoff overtime hockey? Didn't John Boyce say that it was, like, the equivalent of, like, doing cocaine and riding a motorcycle out of a helicopter?
something like that. This was the first week... Last week was the first week where I felt there was, like, an actual void, because, like, all week, the only news was, like...
You're coming off the high of the draft.
Right, there's nothing to build towards now. Like, training camp is still months away. Rookie minicamp is next week, but we aren't going to hear anything about it. And, like, all the news about the Lions, like, they still haven't even signed their draft picks at this point. They haven't signed their draft picks, they haven't signed their undrafted rookie free agents officially. We're just, like... Here's what they said about the draft. And that's, like, the only news that we have right now. So I'm like, I'm feeling it right now, and I know it's only going to get worse.
All right. Lions Wire asks us, favorite in video game Detroit Lion? He gives a few examples, like NFL 2K 1, Herman Moore, Tecmo Super Bowl, Barry Sanders. I don't know what MUT is. Is that Madden?
Madden Ultimate Team
99 OVR for Megatron. Like, what's your favorite Lion in a football video game?
Man, this is kind of a tough question to answer. Alex, do you have, like, one that comes to mind? Because I have two right now, and I'm trying to make a very, very bold decision here, which I'm known to do.
I might have to go with Pat White, because I would always trade for him and get him on the Lions and use him as my my mobile quarterback, you know? When I play Madden, I want to run around like a loose idiot with my quarterback. Like, I don't even give a shit about that game. So, I just want to have fun. Give me Pat White and Michael Vick on my team. I don't care.
I've got to go with Barry Sanders in Tecmo Super Bowl. I love the Tecmo Bowl games. They're all great.
I have three answers now. my first one would be... Madden NFL 2005 Kevin Jones, because for some reason, like, his, like, break tackle was way too high, but then again, like, everybody's break tackle in that game was just, like, broken, because that was the first year they introduced, like, the truck stick.
I remember that.
So it was just, like, super fun to see, like, four different canned animations of, like, somebody running over somebody. Like, Jamal Lewis was, like, the worst. Like, he would just, like, like, pound people's souls into the back of their bodies. So Kevin Jones is up there. My other one is Barry Sanders, but from NFL Street, the first incarnation of that game.
I love NFL Street.
NFL Street was so much fun.
Randy Moss was unstoppable on NFL Street.
Another guy who was unstoppable was Troy Vincent, which is such a weird name, but he had, like, way too high of a speed rating, and your guys would have to play offense and defense, so you'd have to find a position for them to play on offense and defense, because it was 7-on-7. And, like, it honestly has the best, like, game mode of any game. Because, like, if you were playing your buddy head-to-head, you could play, essentially, it would be, like, pickup, like, playground football. So, like, you would go back and forth and, like, alternate picks. And, like, you know, you'd pick from the giant, like, roster pool of players. So that was a lot of fun. And then my last guy is Madden NFL 2006 Mike Furry.
I just looked this up. Do you want to know what Barry Sanders' rushing rating was in Tecmo Super Bowl?
69.
Nice.
All right. One more question here. We'll get out of here. This one's coming from us from TJW Go Blue. You're stranded on a tropical island a la Tom Hanks in Castaway. You get one frivolous item, but the only catch is that it's relatively useless to your survival on said item. What are you bringing along?
Right now, I would answer a bottle of Merlot, but that's kind
of... One bottle of Merlot.
One.
I guess I could bring a whole case of it, but, like, I'm not that much of a degenerate.
It has to be something that's reusable, though, right? Like, something that can give you long-term value.
See, the problem is like, anything I'd list would, like, have to need a power source.
Well, that's the thing. I can't bring a bottle of Merlot, because then that could double as, like, a bottle that could, like, fetch me water, and then I can use it as a water bottle. Or I could find some grapes on the island, and I can make my own wine. I can make my own Merlot.
That's cheating, though. That's your survival.
I know, that's why I said, I guess, I'm sorry, I was influenced, okay? I was influenced to get my answer.
Can I bring a person with large pectoral muscles?
I thought you were going to say your wife, but never mind.
Nah, I want John Cena.
We're not doing the John Cena outros anymore.
I don't care, that's my choice.
All right, well, I'm playing the outro anyway.
Can I bring one more person?
Who?
JT O'Sullivan.
Jesus Christ. We're out, everyone. See you next week.
Give me Jesse Camp.
Man, Jesse Camp ain't got no time to run on the island, man. I gotta get back to MTV where we do it for free every time, man. So high. Man, the Game of Thrones, man. I've seen that a few times. I just call it Game of Bones, man. All boys and girls getting it on, man. Like, it's crazy.
I'm all about the home box office, man.
Hey, man, they had this phrase back in the 80s, man. Bo knows, and you know. 69. Yeah.
Can we just do an entire podcast one time as Jesse Camp? Everyone doing their Jesse Camp impression?
We could definitely throw out the Golden Tate intro and just be like, man, Jesse Camp, we're listening to the Pride of Detroit podcast, P-O-D, 313, man.